Campus.
Take on.
Institution.
Myth.
Mobile.
Cash in on.
Handy.
Advertise.
Come down to.
Trivial.
Push around.
Settle into.
Management.
Once in a while.
Put through.
Criticize.
Blunt.
Issue.
Fantastic.
For once.
When children take up ways of making a living that differ greatly from their parents, differences in outlook can easily arise. This is what Alfred Lubrano found. Brought up in the family of a building worker, education led him to develop different interests and ambitions from his father. Here he writes about how this affected their relationship. Bricklayer's Boy by Alfred Lubrano. My father and I were both at the same college back in the mid-1970s. While I was in class at Columbia, he was laying bricks not far up the street, working on a campus building. Sometimes we'd hook up on the subway going home, he with his tools, I with my books. We didn't chat much about what went on during the day. My father wasn't interested in Dante. I wasn't up on arches. We'd share a New York Post and talk about the Mets. My dad has built lots of places in New York City he can't get into. Colleges, apartments, office towers. He makes his living on the outside. Once the walls are up, a place takes on a different feel for him, as if he's not welcome anymore. It doesn't bother him, though. For my father, earning the cash that paid for my entry into a fancy, bricked-in institution was satisfaction enough. We didn't know it then, but those days were the start of a branching off, a redefining of what it means to be a working man in our family. Related by blood, we're separated by class, my father and I. Being the white-collar son of a blue-collar man means being the hinge on the door between two ways of life. It's not so smooth jumping from Italian old-world style to U.S. yuppie in a single generation. Despite the myth of mobility in America, the true rule, experts say, is rags to rags, riches to riches. Maybe 10% climb from the working to the professional class. My father has had a tough time accepting my decision to become a mere newspaper reporter, a field that pays just a little more than construction does. He wonders why I haven't cashed in on that multi-brick education and taken on some lawyer lucrative job. After bricklaying for 30 years, my father promised himself I'd never lay bricks for a living. He figured an education would somehow rocket me into the upwardly mobile and load some serious money into my pockets. What he didn't count on was his eldest son breaking blue-collar rule number one. Make as much money as you can to pay for as good a life as you can get. He'd tell me about it when I was 19, my collar already fading to white. I was the college boy who handed him the wrong wrench on help around the house Saturdays. You better make a lot of money, my blue-collar handy dad warned. You're going to need to hire someone to hammer a nail into a wall for you. In 1980, after college and graduate school, I was offered my first job on a daily paper in Columbus, Ohio. I broke the news in the kitchen, where all the family business is discussed. My mother wept as if it were Vietnam. My father had a few questions.
Ohio? Where the hell is Ohio?
I said it's somewhere west of New York City, that it was like Pennsylvania, only more so. I told him I wanted to write, and these were the only people who'd take me.
Why can't you get a good job that pays something, like in advertising in the city, and write on the side?
Advertising is lying, I said. I want to tell the truth.
The truth?
The old man exploded, his face reddening as it does when he's up 20 stories in high wind.
What's truth?
I said it's real life, and writing about it would make me happy.
You're happy with your family,
my father said, spilling blue-collar rule number 2.
That's what makes you happy. After that, it all comes down to dollars and cents. What gives you comfort besides your family? Money. Only money.
During the 2 weeks before I moved, he reminded me that newspaper journalism is a dying field. And I could do better. No longer was I the good son who studied hard. I was hacking people off. One night, though, my father brought home some heavy tape and that clear plastic bubble stuff. You pack your mother's second-string dishes in. My father said to me, before he sealed the boxes and helped me take them to UPS, "This is what he wants," my father told my mother the day I left for Columbus.
"What are you gonna do?"
After I said my goodbyes, my father took me aside and pressed 5 $100 bills into my hands.
"It's okay," he said over my weak protests. "Don't tell your mother."
When I broke the news about what the paper was paying me, my father suggested I get a part-time job to supplement my income.
"Maybe you could drive a cab."
Once, after I was chewed out by the city editor for something trivial, I made the mistake of telling my father during a visit home,
"They pay you nothing, and they push you around too much in that business," he told me, the rage building. "Next time, you gotta grab the guy by the throat and tell him he's a big jerk."
My father isn't crazy about his life. He wanted to be a singer and actor when he was young. But his Italian family expected money to be coming in. My dad learned a trade, as he was supposed to, and settled into a life of pre-scripted routine. Although I see my dad infrequently, my brother, who lives at home, is with the old man every day. Chris has a lot more blue collar in him than I do, despite his management-level career. Once in a while, he'll bag a lunch and, in a nice wool suit, meet my father at a construction site and share sandwiches. It was Chris who helped my dad most when my father tried to change his life several months ago. My dad wanted a civil service bricklayer foreman's job that wouldn't be so physically demanding. There was a written test that included essay questions about construction work. My father hadn't done anything like it in 40 years. Every morning, before sunrise, Chris would be ironing a shirt, and my father would sit at the kitchen table and read aloud his practice essays on how to wash down a wall or how to build a tricky corner. Chris would suggest words and approaches. It was so hard for my dad. He had to take a prep course in a junior high school, 3 nights a week after work for 6 weeks. At class time, the outside men would come in. 25 construction workers squeezing themselves into little desks. Tough blue-collar guys armed with number 2 pencils, leaning over and scratching out their practice essays, cement in their hair, tar on their pants. their work boots too big and clumsy to fit under the desks.
"Is this what finals felt like?" my father would ask me on the phone. "Were you always this nervous?"
I told him yes. I told him writing's always difficult. He thanked Chris and me for the coaching, for putting him through school this time. My father thinks he did okay, but he's still awaiting the test results. In the meantime, he takes life the blue-collar way, one brick at a time. When we see each other these days, my father still asks how the money is. Sometimes he reads my stories. Usually he likes them, although he recently criticized one piece as being a bit sentimental. During one of my visits to Brooklyn not long ago, he and I were in the car. On our way to buy toiletries, one of my father's weekly routines.
"You know, you're not as successful as you could be,"
he began, blue-collar blunt as usual. "You paid your dues in school. You deserve better restaurants, better clothes." Here we go, I thought, the same old stuff. I'm sure every family has five or six similar big issues that are replayed like well-worn videotapes. I wanted to fast-forward this thing when we stopped at a red light. Just then my father turned to me, solemn and intense. "I envy you," he said quietly. "For a man to do something he likes and get paid for it, that's fantastic." He smiled at me before the light changed, and we drove on. To thank him for the understanding, I sprang for the deodorant and shampoo. For once, my father let me pay.